Nation of proof source, to be precise. And the point that let this stumble was that proof search for S4 isn't stateless. It worked completely fine for K, because for K, proof search is stateless. I only have to look at the current sequent and the rules. I don't have to know any more than that. So I just keep stupidly applying the rules. For S4, I have the state. Basically, you have to remember things as I search for the proof. Why is that? Well, our termination argument said, well, there are at most these and these many sequents that can crop up in a branch. And therefore, after something like m square steps, one of these sequents is bound to repeat. And then we stop. But of course, in order to do that, we need to remember which sequence we've seen. So, what would really happen in the completeness proof, we have something like a set, say S, a set of sequence that we've already seen, and our state of the proof search is something like this. We have a current sequent that we're currently trying to prove, and we have the set of sequence that we're remembering as having already tried them, basically. And if we build a model for such a thing, it will be if we try to conduct an induction that will give us a model for such a thing, it will look slightly weird. It will basically be an actual model of our target sequent, or of the negation of our target sequent, right? Because we're constructing counter models here. And in the leaves, it will have some putative states. Some putative states as counter models for the sequence we've already seen. And basically, this animal here will be a counter model for our actual target sequence, provided that we already have counter models for the ones already seen that we can glue in this place here. Well, that sounds all nice and well, but it turns out when you really try to formalize this and build a model inductively, then you have to know so much about how this model looks in between that basically you haven't gained anything. So you have to impose so much structure on this thing that you might just as well stick to the original proof graph that you have. So this idea basically fails. So now what I'm going to do is give you a hopefully correct description of how this works, and then we're going to try it before I prove or attempt to give a sort of hand-wavy proof that it's correct. Basically what we're doing here is tableau calculi in disguise, right? So tableau calculi work basically the opposite way there. In tableau calculi, you have things that look like sequence, but you're not trying to show they are valid, you're trying to show they are satisfiable. So everything's exactly dual. And then you build models, etc. So everything looks very much as here. And tableau are, infamous for being messy. So this was one failed attempt to present it in a way that wouldn't be messy, but apparently we have to do it in a messy way after all. So, okay, how does this work? So we start with a failed proof search. As as a nearly tree-shaped graph. The graph will only be nearly tree-shaped because there will eventually be back edges. We can leave these imaginary because we can actually reconstruct them from a structure that is basically tree-shaped. I mean, this comes from encountering sequence again that we've already seen. So, either we can opt to make an explicit back edge in the tree for such a sequence that we've already seen, or we can just leave it implicit and say, well, okay, anybody looking at the graph will be able to see that the sequence is already in the graph and just draw the additional edge for himself. Okay, to phrase these things reasonably, I'm going to need a somewhat wholesale piece of terminology and for propositional reasoning. So, whenever I use the adjective propositionally, I mean interpreting all non-propositional constructs that I see as atoms. So I can use this for any logic that I use. So for instance, if I have a predicate logic formula and I see quantifiers in that and I say propositionally, then that means, well, I use a parser that doesn't recognize the universal quantifier and will instead assume that this is just a weird name for some atom. And here in modal logic, I use a parser that whenever it encounters a box or a diamond, will just say, heck, I don't know this, so it's going to be an atom. Okay. In particular, I will use this notation here, using the double horizontal bar on my turnstile to indicate I mean this semantically. I mean this to denote validity of the corresponding sequence. So I mean the delta to be derived disjunctively and the gamma conjunctively. And what I mean, this is propositionally valid. So the index PL stands for propositional logic. So for instance, not enough room. For instance, this thing here will be propositionally valid, right? So I don't have to know what the box means. Just by regarding these things as strange names for atoms, I can see that this is going to be valid. Okay. Okay, and then I want to talk about nodes that I pick from my proof graph, from the graph representing my failed proof search, to form the actual states of the counter model that I construct. And I'm going to recognize these as those places where I actually get to apply my for rule up there according to the proof strategy that I've imposed last time. So first, exhaustively apply all propositional rules and T before you apply for. So now formally, we're going to say that a sequence is saturated if I cannot usefully apply T or any propositional rules to it anymore. We've seen last time that this is slightly complicated because these sequences can actually go in circles by applications of T and subsequent propositional reasoning. So basically because things may decompose propositionally and then disappear, and then I could apply T again, but nothing new happens, something like that. We've seen examples. So I'm going to call such a sequence saturated if no propositional rule applies to it. Well, that is, if it's not an axiom and if it doesn't contain any propositional connectives. And secondly, I have exhaustively applied T, but this is slightly hard to phrase. So, of course, what I assume is I find some box phi in gamma on the left-hand side. And what I would now want to write, then I also find phi in gamma, but that might not be the case because I have taken phi apart using propositional reasoning. So instead, I require that phi propositionally follows from gamma, well, and actually the negation of delta. So what this boils down to is that this sequence here, where I insert phi on the right-hand side, is propositionally valid. So this allows me to treat this whole bit of having lots of propositional steps in between in a somewhat wholesale manner. Okay, now. Now I build a model from my failed proof structure. I have to say what the stakes are. So I have to somehow find the stakes in my failed proof attempt. Now I have to be careful. The proof attempt as a whole fails, but there might be some sequence cropping up in between that are provable. So for instance, I might be applying the right conjunction rule in some place. So I have two premises to prove, and it might be the case that one of them actually is provable and the other one isn't. So there are a provable sequence in the graph. So I of course pick only the unprovable sequence, and out of these I pick only the saturated ones. Well, the valuation, that's easy, of course. A saturated sequence will just tell me which of the atoms to make true. I mean, we've already seen this for K, right? So I'm going to make P true at such a state, which is going to be a sequent gamma entails delta, if and only if P literally appears in gamma. I don't have to worry about P appearing somewhere hidden deep inside a propositional formula, because by restricting to saturated sequence, I'm sure that doesn't happen. And then the transitions. Now the transitions, that's a bit of a mouthful. So first of all, the evident thing is that the descendants of such a state in the proof search, meaning all the states that I encounter by going backwards, they're going to be successes. then there might be some of them missing because I've seen them before. So then there are going to be back edges, and these back edges are going to go to premises of four that I've already seen. Well, that isn't quite precise because these premises aren't going to be states in general, because I remove boxes, so there are going to be possibly propositional connectives uncovered by removing the boxes. So what I really mean by that is I go back to the premise that I've already seen and then take all states under it. I'm going to draw a picture in a moment. And then at the end of it, I still have to form the reflexive and transitive closure, although I already said all descendants here, which already implies transitive closure. Well, because I have these back edges sitting in there, I nevertheless have to form the transitive closure again after that. Okay, so that's the full definition of the transitions. So, and so this is a point that is more important to practice than to actually fully prove. Because you're asked to do it on a sheet, right? On the sheet, on an exercise, what, three or four, I think? Four, I guess. So we're going to do an example in a moment, but first I'm going to draw a picture of what I mean by these back edges, right? So now for once I'm going to turn to my notes. Of course, these should be the ones for the lecture, not for the next paper. Here. So let's say we have this, right? A sequent of this form, lots of boxes on the left-hand side and a psi on the right-hand side. Now this need not be a state because the psi may contain propositional connectives at top level, so I'll somehow conduct a proof search backwards, and this may branch because there may be conjunctions, for instance. If psi is a conjunction, right, then I'll get two branches here. Or if at some point some conjunction gets uncovered, then I might get other branches. So after some rule applications, I will reach, say, one state here, gamma 0 entails delta 0, and say a second one here. Could, of course, be arbitrarily many. And say I pursue this one further, so there's now going to be applications of, say, 4 to this one here, right? Because it's a state, the only thing that I can usefully apply is 4. And after some time, I reach a sequent of this form here, where I happen to find a match of the 4 rule. This should again be a state, right? A match of the 4 rule, which as its premise would give me something that I've already seen, namely this guy up here. So now I write in these mentioned back edges. So the back edge would, well, in principle go there, but this is not a state. So where the back edges really go is to all the children of this state. All the states that descend from this sequent here. Right. Now observe something. No, don't observe it yet, actually. We observe things later when we actually prove that. We've just finished the construction, right? So I've now given a complete definition of what the transition relation this funny animal is, and the other things have already been defined. So now, what we're now going to do together, well, actually, you're going to do it, and I'm going to watch, is try this out. So what this is all really about is about satisfiability, so about non-validity of a negated formula. So I'm going to give you a negated formula to prove, and the proof will fail, showing that what comes under the negation is satisfiable. So what I'm going to build here, I'm going to give you the intuition of this formula, so as to better guide the proof search. I want to force something like this, where P, I want to force a path where P and Q alternate, beginning with P. So I'm going to impose, well, P holds now, and wherever I go, two things hold. If I currently see P, then at some point in the future I'll see Q. And the other way around, Q implies diamond P. Okay. So, now you can try and prove this formula, and try and hopefully fail to prove this formula by means of the sequence system. And then we'll see how to extract a model from it. You can be generous with propositional steps, right, by basically just omitting them and just going directly to whatever state you think should come out of them, right? I mean, by now we should be able to sort of glance over this. You will observe that you would reach rather deterministically one point where you can apply the four rule. I think you've just reached it, if I've seen it correctly. And after that, I mean, everything just more or less repeats. Did I write the correct form? Damn, it becomes slightly too difficult if we use Q. Please replace Q by something that is actually mutually exclusive with P, such as not P. I mean, this looks more complicated, but it's actually easier. So if you put in, if you just substitute in whatever you have now, you can substitute Q with not P. That will serve to eliminate branches in the proof search, right? So now with not P in place of Q, the proof search is really entirely deterministic. No branching. Well, no branches that wouldn't immediately die, basically. So you can skip that. Wenn wir jetzt doch noch Q, das Q ist natürlich dann auch überall ersetzt, ne? Also, achso, da steht schon. Ja, es mit dem Q hat man so ein bisschen Branching drin, ist das Problem. Deswegen hatte ich ursprünglich mit dem Q, aber mit dem Nicht-P ist es tatsächlich dann einfacher, wenn man einen kleineren Graphen kriegt, sich eben P und Nicht-P gegenseitig ausschließen. Also P und Q ja gleichzeitig gelten können. Jetzt die Militärregeln, ist das schon mal genau? Ja, muss ja, ne?
Gut,
dann
machen wir das andere.
Ach so, Moment, das sieht jetzt hier aus. Also wohlgemerkt, die Regeln dann rückwärts. Ne? Also das lässt rückwärts und hier schon das passiert hier. Nee, das ist zum Beispiel hier schon vorwärts Schritt, ne? Wenn das Pirio gebracht wird. Da kommt man natürlich leicht durcheinander. Ne? Und auch das hier ist ein Vorwärtsschritt. Ne? Also wir wollen die Regeln rückwärts annehmen. Die stehen links. Das ist die Idee, dass die Regel, die Implikation über praktisch den Turnstile verteilt, ist die, wenn die rechts steht. Links kriegst du praktisch ein Branching. Und davon kannst du aber eins vergessen, weil das
Ne, du kriegst dann immer dann links die Implikation hast, dann sagt dir die Regel, die er hergeleitet hat, dass man entweder rechts holt. Jung jetzt entweder links P oder rechts den. Nee, hier rum. Ich komme durcheinander. Welcher geht nach links und welcher geht nach rechts? Das steht, ist es richtig, so wie ich es gemacht habe. Genau. Wie habt ihr es hier? So, Moment. Also, wenn der links ist, dann geht also der linke nach rechts und der rechte nach links, genau. Ne? Und wenn du dir jetzt vorstellst, dass der hier zum Beispiel der linke nach rechts geht, dann wäre es ja beweisbar. Also nimmt man stattdessen den rechten und nimmt ihn nach links. Also dein und nicht P. Ja, da die Schlagspaß man immer alle hinter sich. Genau, ja. Also man verfolgt natürlich nur den Erfolglosen. Ne? Also der Erfolgreiche ist natürlich egal. Linke Seite ist deine Crew. Genau. So, warte mal, P interessiert dein. Huch.
Moment.
Okay, in der Tat wahrscheinlich richtig sehen. Da wir Regeln ja nur für die Box haben, die Formmaschine mit Boxen dasteht, das ist nicht so richtig sinnvoll, dann das einzuführen. Wenn man für die dann keine Regeln hat, dann muss man unter dem dann gleich wieder. Ja, das ist schon wahr. Also, man kann es ja relativ mechanisch machen. Also, ich würde auch getrost bei und bleiben, wenn es wie gekonnt dasteht. Also, einfach die ganzen Formeln nach links schieben, ne? Insgesamt eine Munition, ja, dann steht das halt links vom Polster. Ja, das ist ja jetzt schon dekodiert, so absichtlich, nicht? Also, das war ja ursprünglich mal ein Nicht-Umdressieren und hier nur Pferd im Morgen irgendwie dann dekodiert ist, nicht? Dass wir dann einfach so lassen können, einfach dann. Wir sollten auch so nach links schieben, ohne das Licht. Ne? Komma streichen. Ja, vielleicht fangen wir damit mal an. Ja, das ist ziemlich geschickt, hierfür einen Namen zu vergeben. Also hier Box, Punkt, Punkt, Punkt ist natürlich schon mal gut. Ne? Also ja, vielleicht lässt man es tatsächlich so. ja, einmal vorführen vielleicht.
Das ist auch ganz gut. Q was not P.
Yeah, it's supposed to be not P now. So this would be implies diamond not P as written on the right.
Yeah, I
Q
changed the diamond through boxes.
Yeah, sure.
Because we
yeah.
Don't have rules for diamond. So it should be not box P.
Yeah. The T rule, I guess you want to apply next, right? It's still right in front of you. It's hard to see when it's directly. Maybe an explicit turnstile at the end. So that's what I meant by, so here's one place where we could be generous, right? So in principle, there's a branch, as we can see, because there's an implication. But if we look at that implication that we're currently tackling, which is the implication P implies something, well, we already have P on the left-hand side, and the left-hand side is conjunctive. So we have P and P implies something, and of course also P and not P implies something. Now, just using common sense, quote unquote, right? I mean, okay, it's not what the man on the street would see as common sense, but I mean, just glancing at these formulas, we see that we can totally forget about the implication not P implies something because we have P on the left-hand side. So any implication assuming not P, we can just ignore. And then we also have an implication that assumes P. And since we have P, I mean, there's obviously no point in assuming this left branch, which basically explores what would happen if P didn't hold, well, because we know it already holds, right? So we can immediately just move to the right branch where we combine P and P implies what is this not box P, and just add, well, which one of these not box P, I think, to the right-hand side, right? No, to the left-hand side, to the left-hand side, as you did. There's a negation to many, I think, right? P box something. You've taken apart the implication P implies not box P, right? So
this
one. So what crops up on the left-hand side should be... shouldn't that be...
on the right-hand side.
Does it come up on the right-hand side? No. Miriam had the rule here, just a moment. May I see it again? So the implication rule says that we either move the left part to the right, as you already did, or the right part to the left. So the right-hand part is not box P. So the additional formula that we get on the right there should be... No, the right alternative. I mean, the left one we can forget, right? Because that's provable. We're looking for unprovable things. So the right-hand part, there should, instead of not box not P, it should be not box P, right? Yeah. I mean, this is the part where you take about this implication here and move its right-hand side to the left, and it's okay. With one not less.
Okay, the T rule? No, the
for
the other one.
Actually, the P goes away in the for rule. The for rule drops the context at the left-hand side P. So the P that's to the left of the turnstile would go away through that rule. No, the left, other left.
The left.
Thanks. Okay. If you look at the for rule, right, so the context that's not, the non-boxes, they're dropped. Now you basically start over, right? You apply the T rule again. I mean, the only difference is that now the P is on the other side of the turnstile. Otherwise, everything looks as you originally had, right? So basically, the whole thing goes the same style.
Can we now apply the T rule?
We can apply the T rule, yeah. We have something to the left of the turnstile, and we can just add of whatever's under the box. So now we pick the other implication, right? The not P implies something. And we know that one of the branches doesn't help us, so we can pick the other one straight away, the one where we take the not box not P and put it to the right, to the left of the turnstile, right? Yeah, like I said, the other branch we can forget, basically. I mean, it suffices to have one unsuccessful branch, and we know that the other branch is going to be successful, right? Because we effectively have not P, right? Well, we have P to the right-hand side, which becomes not P if we move it to the left. Right?
But maybe here it's better to write it and then explicitly annotate that we can forget it. So
well, okay, yeah, go ahead and write. Yeah, okay, thank you. Yes, didactically better. Okay. No, like I said, the context is dropped, so the P of these two disappears. No, the right-hand P, the P on to the right of the turnstile goes away.
This.
Yes. So that's context that's ignored because it doesn't have a box, basically. Maybe you should annotate the step by the for rule because that will make it easier to find that step later. The one that you just took was via the for rule, right? Oh right, on the left. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The other when this happened slightly earlier, we had already dropped it before, generously. So what we see now, basically, is, well, we haven't directly run, we haven't run in the kind of circle that our model construction specifies, so it would go on slightly longer than strictly necessary now, because, well, we do have a repeating sequent. So this guy here has been seen before, namely here, right? But if we play this for one more round, then we'll get a literal repetition, basically. So, being slightly generous about this, so the model that we extract, right, is now before us. So where are our four applications? Here and here. So the states, no colored chalk, the states are this one, and wait a moment, this one. Well, almost, strictly speaking, we should still take apart this irrelevant implication here. Okay, so these are states, and of course I get an arrow down here because that's a descendant. And now here, I basically arrive at something that has appeared before, and the state to which I actually go back is going to be the one under it. I mean, or all states under it, but there is only one. So the arrow goes back up here, here's the back edge. And there's our model, basically. So yeah, we could have drawn it directly, of course, having understood the original formula. So effectively what the model does very abstractly is this, right? It consists of two states. One of them satisfies P, the other satisfies not P, and it goes between them in a circle. So, like I said, there are some abbreviation in here because this here isn't literally a rule conclusion of four, so we would have to play the game for one more round to get the actual repetition. Okay, you're not content.
I'm not sure how clear it was why we're dropping some of the states and...
Oh no, there are only two states up to now.
So the P and box, phi and P and the at the very top and at the very bottom, the thing that you circle at the very bottom of the, at the very top, you didn't circle them to mean that they are states.
Oh, no, I mean, so that's why I was complaining about the lack of color, so I couldn't distinguish this. So one kind of circling means to point out the repetition of a sequence we've already seen, and the other kind of circling serves to pick out the states from the diagram. So there's only two states that are these two, basically those states to which we apply the for, so those sequence to which we apply the for. Okay, now to conclude this, we would like to actually prove that this is correct, and now we don't have any blackboard left that we could wipe. So we're going to have to wipe what we just did. Has everybody copied this? I'll wait for a moment before I wipe it because all the rest is still going to be needed. Sorry? Okay.
Remember what would happen if you unravel this model, right? If you remember the construction of transitive and reflexive unraveling of the transitive and reflexive model. So here, those two arrows, in fact, there should be four because there should be loop, which has not
drawn. Oh, yeah, right. Models. I haven't drawn the loops, obviously, yet.
So you can think now how a tree-like counter model for this thing would look like. And it's clear that it can be finite.
Okay. So now I've constructed the model and I have to somehow prove that it does its job. So the states are these unprovable saturated sequence. And basically, what we want to prove is that every one of these states refutes the sequent that it is. But if we really want to do it strictly, that's not quite enough, because this says only something about the states, not about all the other sequence that I find in my large proof graph. So we have this huge proof graph here that I've just erased, regretfully. And the only two of the sequence in this thing were states. All the rest was propositional stuff in between and applications of T and whatnot. So we would like to claim something about those states as well. So, and the claim that I want to make is this. So what I want to claim is that a state in my proof graph will satisfy, as a state in my model, obviously, all formulas phi that are propositionally entailed by its negation. So it refutes all sequence, well, all sequence that are above it, or from which it descends, well, which are above it, yes, in our failed proof attempt, excluding applications of rule 4. So it refutes, thereby, all the sequence from which this given sequence descends by applying the propositional rules and T. Yeah, like I said, I mean, this is messy, right? This is what I wanted to avoid, so, but it doesn't work. One has to do it. Okay, what's behind this? Well, what's behind this is that the propositional rules and T are local. They don't really change the state. So they only say things that say stuff about things that hold at one given state, and applying the rules will make the sequent weaker, well, transform it equivalently or make it properly weaker, and so negating the sequence makes if we negate the sequence they become stronger and stronger, so. That way around?
No, did I say this right?
No, the other. Blah, 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 blah. Too many negations in here, just a moment. So let's look at the one rule that does this. There's only one rule that doesn't transform equivalently. That's the right rule for conjunction. It's like this, so to see it. So that's what the rule looks like. We've all used it several times. Gamma and if gamma entails phi comma delta and gamma entails psi comma delta, then gamma entails phi and psi delta. So we go from here to there. So we make the sequence weaker, right? We take conjuncts away. So if we falsify even the weaker sequence, then we'll all the more falsify the original one, right? So whatever falsifies a descendant will falsify the sequence where that comes from. Okay, so that's the example of a propositional rule, and well, T is just an equivalent transformation of the sequent, so that's clear as well. Okay, but we still have to set to prove that claim, right? So, and now we have a claim that has a quantifier in it that will allow proving it by induction, right? And okay, very hand wavy. All the steps in that induction are going to be trivial, except the ones where phi contains a box. More precisely, where phi contains is either a positive or a negative boxed formula. Okay, so how does this work? Okay, so for the case where Well, we have a boxed formula. This whole propositional reasoning thing there goes away, right? This was just to make the propositional steps in between work. So once we have a box, I mean, there's only one way to propositionally entail a box, because a box is propositionally an atom. So either the box is positive, that means it's on the left in gamma, or the box is negative, that means it's on the right in delta. So there's only two cases, left, right? So again, here's some very hand-wavy comment on this. So the propositional logic part actually goes away. So there's essentially two cases to be dealt with. So here's the basically positive one, the one where we have a box on the left in gamma. Explicitly as R. So basically, whenever I have a relational successor state of my original state gamma entails delta, which is now a sequent and a state, right? Then by observations that we've made a few times, the box will always stay there. It never goes away. That's how the rules are built. So how does this come about? Well, either I go to actual descendants, then it stays there, or I have one of these back loops, but these back loops only come from applications of rule 4, and rule 4 will retain all boxes on the left-hand side. So, and then, because this thing is saturated, which way did I write this? No, I did write it that way, yes. Because this thing is saturated, what's under the box, the phi, will be propositionally entailed by, well, gamma prime and not delta prime, namely the propositional formula that I'm trying to satisfy. Well, that matches my claim up there in the now simplified case phi, right? I've taken the box away, so I can apply the inductive hypothesis. So this animal here, gamma prime entails delta prime, as a state in my model, now satisfies the formula phi by my claim, right? Inductively applied to phi. And we're done, right? And the other bit, is where box phi appears in delta, so is essentially negative. I'm trying to falsify this. So what I'm trying to do here is refute the sequent gamma entails delta, so I'm trying to make everything in gamma true and everything in delta false. So, how does this go? So, well, we have a successor state, gamma prime entails delta prime, of that thing. Where this successor state, gamma prime entails delta prime, and, well, descends from from a conclusion, or the conclusion of the application of the for rule that I get here, right? So if I have box phi and delta, then I have an application of the for rule. And the for rule will do what? Well, it will connect all boxes from gamma and put phi alone on the right-hand side. So descending from well, let's call this guy box psi because it's on the right-hand side. So then what will happen? I will get this sequence here entailing psi, right? So that's my conclusion of the for rule. That's not a state in general, but if I exhaustively apply the rules, propositional and T, then I will arrive at a state, this one. So it will descend from this via T and the propositional rules. Okay. And what else do I need? Okay, then it will, because this is a descendant via T and the propositional rules, it will be the case that gamma prime propositionally entails psi, comma delta. Because that's an invariant of all the rules that I apply, including the T rule. That's basically because the T rule just adds stuff equivalently. Right? Okay, and by the inductive hypothesis, it follows that the sequent gamma prime entails delta prime. Wait a moment. Yeah. Is that right? I'm getting lost with negations here. Have I lost a negation somewhere? I don't think I have. No. So I'm satisfying psi, and that is what I wanted to achieve because, well, I want to falsify box psi. There is a negation missing somewhere, right? If I want to falsify box psi, then I want to... Yeah, but I mean that's not going to help me with my lost negation, is it? So where did it go away? Wait a moment. So the negation went missing here. So I refute all these things. Right? Is that true? Yes. Because I wrote the phi on the right here. So Setter's phis would have been true if I put the phi on the left. So what I want to do to these guys is refute them. Like I said, I want to make everything that's on the right-hand side of the turnstile false, and everything that's on the left-hand side of the turnstile true. So let's check if that survives here. So here, and in the other case, I did it right. So this is in gamma, so I want to make it true. If I put it to the right-hand side of the turnstile, it becomes negated, right? And if it's already in delta, I leave it where it is, but I now want to refute it. So this here...
Wait, I'm confused now. It's gamma, state, gamma equals delta refutes all phi such that gamma entails phi and delta
reconstructions.
What if this phi is stopped, for example?
Ah, this is a... So what I originally wrote was something different. Let's see. So originally it said satisfies. And what I wrote here was gamma and... So conjunction of gamma and not so conjunction of gamma and negation of the disjunction of delta would entail phi. So everything that's or propositionally, right? So maybe let's write this in here. Propositionally entails phi. So that's what I originally had there. So this is apparently not, but that should be equivalent to this. So what goes wrong? So,
but originally you wrote that it satisfies or such phi.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So it's not refutes is not the correction.
Because also the above reformulation would hold for phi equal stop, right? So we don't want to refute stop.
Yeah. So no, the claim was correct then, yeah. So wait a minute. Yeah, in particular, this would hold for every element of gamma. So yes, I would want to make true all the elements of gamma. So what went wrong here? If box psi is in delta, then I want to make it true. Ah, wait a minute. No, so there's the mistake, I believe, must be here. So, I mean, this guy here, this guy is someone with a mission to make box phi true and psi false. Right? So, I descend from that and so we should write this more carefully. So it's just this last bit that doesn't work. So I descend from this sequent by applying propositional rules backwards. So by applying propositional rules backwards, I make the sequent weaker. So this thing here as a sequent but read as a propositional formula will works the other way around. Will be propositionally entailed by, let's give this guy a name. So let's call this guy S, right? So this will be propositionally entailed by S. Okay. And what I'm claiming is it satisfies everything. So, so we want. Blackboard. Use this one. So we want this here, right? We want that gamma prime propositionally entails not psi comma delta prime. Okay, so this we can translate. Right, so it's all a question of negations, like really, yeah. So what this we can translate as, well, if we bring delta prime to the left, that means if I convert this into propositional formulas, this here being a conjunction and delta prime being a disjunction, so I bring this disjunction to the left by negating it, this thing should entail not psi. Okay, this here is basically the negation of my sequent. Right? It says that this sequent here doesn't hold. Okay. Negating turns this entailment around. So this negated sequent propositionally entails the negation of S. And S is this. So the negation of S says all these positive things, all these things on the left-hand side are true, I don't care, and the thing on the right-hand side is false, so this entails not psi. So yeah, it's just a question of pursuing all these damn negations. So it does its job, right? So it satisfies, so by the inductive hypothesis, right, we have now proved this, and by the inductive hypothesis, it follows that the state gamma prime entails delta prime really does satisfy not psi as desired. Yeah, there must be some more direct way that doesn't go via all these negations, but yeah.
The thing that you wrote in Del Piper is negation of S? What?
Yes, negation of S. Well, S is this sequence here. Our conclusion or our premise of the reverse application of the four rule. And, well, to falsify that thing means to falsify psi, right? And we arrive at gamma prime delta prime, and this is something propositionally what weaker, right? So refuting it entails refuting S, and refuting S entails refuting psi. So thanks, that does it. Okay, oof. Big box, the proof is finished.
Not the modal box.
No, not the modal box, just the QED box. Okay, so in fact, this means that we're going to have the tutorial next time. The tutorial will be a fairly short event because there's only one exercise that we should really talk about, right? So apparently nobody had any measurable difficulties with exercises 1 to 3. We should remark that, yes, we do have permutations, so some proofs are easier, or in particular proof search is easier than I think only one or two solutions made out. The thing that we should actually do in class is the induction exercise on admissibility of the contraction rule. Of course, we managed to fall for this notational trap again when we set the exercise. So we wrote it in the way that formulas are often written in sequent calculus. In sequent calculus, capital A and capital B are typical meta variables for formulas. So this wasn't a typo for small a, small e, small b. Of course, we want to contract more than just atoms. We want to contract proper formulas. Of course, we cannot blame anybody for interpreting the exercise in this much easier way. So everybody got full marks for solving the easy case that A and B are just atoms. But of course, we still want to see the case where we correctly write little phi in place of capital A and contract actual formulas. So that's what we're going to do next time. That won't take so much time, hopefully. So we'll be able to get started on intuitionistic logic on Monday, right? So like use half the session for, or less than half, hopefully, for this inductive proof. And then I'll hand over to Tadeusz, who will get started on intuitionistic logic. Thanks again.